in the House together. Then he moved along to the Senate to take over the seat vacated when Joe Markley was running for lieutenant governor. He has written an op-ed recently. And folks, if you can Google this, because you may not, I don't know what paper he wrote it in. We're going to find that out. I'm going to read just a brief excerpt from it, because I've actually read the whole thing. I wish I had the time to read the whole thing now, but you can find this, I'm sure. It is very well written, and the points that he makes are spot on. But let me just read this really quickly before I bring him on. Aside from issuing over 60 executive orders, he's talking about our governor, Ned Lamont. Aside from issuing over 60 executive orders, many of which reach far beyond protecting public health, he created a myriad of public-private partnerships which enjoy the power of an executive branch agency but have immunity from transparency requirements like FOIA. He also hired a COVID-19 consulting firm at huge taxpayer expense in a state that is only treading financial water with borrowed monies. Possibly more egregious, the Secretary of State has taken this public health crisis and used it as a means to push her mail-in voting plan by cleverly utilizing the universal support for allowing COVID-19 to be added to the list of eligible reasons to obtain an absentee ballot. Boy, does that get right to it. And if you think that's just a sample, if you think that's spot on, you got to look into this op-ed. We're going to find out where this appeared as we welcome back to the program. My goodness, it's been several months that we've had him. State Senator Rob Sampson. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, Representative. Delighted to join you. I also appreciated our service together in the legislature, and I enjoy your radio show very, very much. I think you've got the best audience around. All the callers always seem to be very up on the issues.
Rob, coming from you, you are, oh, man, you're awesome. You are doing an outstanding job. I tell you, I really do. I monitor this. It's so funny because I'm having served two terms in the legislature, you know, with you, and I can kind of relay a lot about how a lot of the ongoings of the Capitol, how things work and how frustrating it is. But you're still up there, though. You're fighting the battle, and you're doing a yeoman's job at it. I really wanted to extend that to you this morning.
I appreciate that. I don't know if I need my head examined or what, but yes, it's an ongoing battle, and somebody's got to continue to speak up and make sure that the taxpayers and the citizens of this state, their rights are defended.
I couldn't agree more. And before we get to that, to this op-ed that you so well articulated, listen, Joe Markley's shoes were very, very hard to fill. You and I mean, you know him better than I do, but I know him pretty well. But let me tell you, Rob, you are very impressive. I think you're doing an outstanding job representing your district, Senator. I really do.
Well, I know that my op-ed sounded a whole lot better with you reading it, and I remember when I wrote it. So thank you very much for the compliment.
All right, that's enough of the compliment. I want you to talk. First of all, what paper did it appear in?
It was in a bunch of newspapers across the state, mostly the local papers in my district, Wilkett, Southington area.
Okay, so it wasn't in the Hartford Courant or anything?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, yeah, I might want to submit that. I mean, I think it's so well written and so spot on. You have a farther reach. Granted, they may not publish it, but, hey, you don't know unless you try. First of all, what was behind it? Is it just a lot that was on your mind, or you want to get it off your chest, or what was the thought process when you put this op-ed together?
Well, I've been focused on, I guess, the opposition voice to the governor and what we hear every day in the news media about the handling of COVID-19 and what's going on in the legislature. And I guess my greatest concern now is that we're about to go into a special session. And I believe the citizens of Connecticut need to know the truth about what is happening.
Yeah,
we're going to go in for four individual bills. Two of them have been in the news very prominently. You have the issue with COVID-19 absentee ballots voting, mm-hmm. and then you have the police accountability bill, two things that have been in the news every day. Certainly the COVID voting issue is important and something that needs to be addressed because it's timely and it's necessary for the legislature to meet to take care of that before the November elections. The other items that are on the agenda, I don't really think that they're critical enough to warrant a special session, an emergency certification, a process you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I would much prefer we waited till next year and we did the legitimate legislative process to make law, you know, where we have bills introduced, you have a committee process that has legitimate public hearings that are properly noticed for people to participate in, and there's debate, which ultimately produces better legislation that benefits the citizens. This is just ramming things through, and my greatest fear, Gary, is that this is being used for political purposes. The almost universal support for allowing people to vote as absentee voters because of COVID-19 is well known and well understood. And if we lived in a world where the legislature existed just to put good policy in place and pass laws that everyone agrees with, we would go in and we would vote to allow that to happen. It would take 5 minutes. We would be done. We would all go home. But I'm afraid that's not what's going to happen. The Democrats are going to use this as an opportunity to put a bunch of other things into that bill, including the Secretary of State's scheme that she's working on right now, where we're mailing absentee ballot applications to every person on the voter rolls, living or dead, or the house cat. over 100,000 ballot applications were returned to her. That's an example of just how terrible the information is that is on our voter rolls. And I don't want that to be part of the understanding that you should be able to apply for an absentee ballot because of COVID-19. I think we all want to see that. But I see how the Democrats operate year after year at Hartford, and what they're going to do is they're going to put this bill forward, and they're going to put so many items in it that Republicans may end up voting no. And they'll use that as a political wedge or a hammer to hit us over the head with in November.
We're speaking with State Senator Rob Sampson. Have you actually seen the language to this absentee ballots bill that you'll be voting on in special session?
Well, you know how things are in Hartford. There are always versions of bills.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe I have seen the final version of the bill. I would leave it at that. There is a draft copy floating around, and in fact, the legislature, the GAE committee, met yesterday for something called a listening session to go over that language. To me, the whole thing is a travesty. As I just mentioned, when you are making laws the right way, there is a process, and that process has not been followed. And number one, you allow for public input, and the way that's done is with a actual public hearing that is properly noticed according to the rules of the legislature and our state laws that say, you know, it has to be out in advance so many days. I think it's 5 business days. People need to have the opportunity to sign up, register, say their piece, and be on the record. This thing, they announced it the day before at around 1 p.m. that they were going to have a listening session from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., limited to 4 hours, and that anyone who wanted to participate must register at before 10 a.m. in the morning. This is when I got the notice, Gary. I got the notice the day before.
Wow.
And I happen to be the ranking senator on that committee. It is just unbelievable how the lengths they are going to just disregard the process and have little respect for the minority party.
But what, like you said a moment ago, that's par for the course. That's how it's been for quite a long time. You know, is to bypass the legislative process, including the public hearings, and just, you know, go to the special session. And the e-certification, and it's just, it is an absolute travesty if people truly understood how this is really circumventing the regulations already to get a bill passed. What are you anticipating being in this bill? I was asking if you had read the bill, and you're right. There's usually several different versions of the same bill, and you really don't get to see the one that's actually going to be voted on more often than not until hours prior to you're ready to actually cast that vote. But what do you anticipate there being in the bill?
Well, I'm certain it's going to include the thing we agree on, which is allowing COVID-19 to count as an illness for absentee ballots. Again, I would vote for that in a heartbeat. That should be the only thing we're voting on. Instead, they're going to vote to basically sanctify the Secretary of State's actions, which are to use a third-party vendor to mail out all of these absentee ballot applications to every name on the voter rolls. They're going to certify these mailboxes. I don't know if you've seen these yet, or your listeners may have, but basically it looks like a, you know, your typical navy blue U.S. Postal Service mailbox, except it's painted silver and gold, yeah. And it's intended for a place that people to drop their ballots once they get them back. I have grave concerns about this. I mean, the reason why the U.S. Postal Service has really limited the number of post boxes is because of vandalism, tampering, etc. In fact, now you can only find them at the actual post offices, and they have a very, very narrow slot to prevent foreign objects and things from being put in there and for people stealing the mail right out of the boxes. These boxes do not have that same level of security, and we're dealing with something as important as an election. I don't know why we have to have them to begin with. I don't understand what they have to do with COVID. The normal process would work to mail in your application, receive your ballot, and then mail your ballot back in or drop it off directly at the town clerk's office.
Yeah, and while I'm concerned about those silver boxes, and like you, I have seen photos of them, what I'm even more concerned about is really the theft of this mass quantity of absentee ballots. What is to prevent somebody in a household of five who can vote from somebody stealing purposely with intent, you know, a ballot of somebody who you reside with, and have that person kind of late in the game try to contact their registrar or voter and say, hey, listen, I didn't get my ballot. Oh, yes, you did, sir. We sent them out. Or to really or to swipe it, you know, and oh, I got to mail this, or I got to put this in the box, not mail. I got to put this in the box tomorrow. All of a sudden it goes missing. It just sounds like it opens up itself for even more fraud, as if fraud didn't exist, and, you know, now we got more of it.
Right. Yeah, the Democrats for years will tell you that there is no such thing as voter fraud in Connecticut, and that's just nonsense. I mean, all it takes is a simple Google search, and you can find loads and loads of voter fraud in Connecticut, particularly among absentee ballots, and even more particularly among Democrat primaries for absentee ballots. Just last year in Bridgeport, there was a huge dispute over it. A number of years ago, a colleague of ours, State Representative Christina Ayala, a Democrat from either Bridgeport or New Haven, I can't remember which one, but she was actually prosecuted for committing absentee ballot fraud. The danger with absentee ballots, Gary, is that there is no tracking. And generally speaking, you never find out the fraud was committed. And if you do, you're going to find out so much after the fact that there's no way to trace what actually happened. You can imagine all sorts of circumstances with all these applications being mailed to apartment buildings. You know, people can intercept the applications.
Right.
They can intercept the ballots, complete them, send them back. In previous cycles, there have been reports of people essentially ordering absentee ballot applications for entire nursing home, you know, populations, and completing them and sending them in. And who's going to know? Unless someone comes forward and says, I already voted, and this does happen, the registrars will tell you that, you know, people show up to vote on election day and they're already checked off.
Yeah. You know, that begs the question, it just makes me think, why is it okay for hundreds of people to go to Walmart and Stop and Shop and, you know, the beach and the park, so on and so forth, but we can't open polling locations for in-person voting? And my gut tells me it's because polls show that Democrat voters are more afraid of this virus than Republican voters.
Right. I mean, I totally agree. I think the virus itself has been very overblown in the news media. Unless you are elderly and compromised in some way, there is extremely little risk of, you know, a fatality. Obviously, no one wants to get the virus, and I want to help prevent the virus from spreading. And because of that, that's why I'm willing to support that one issue, which is to allow COVID-19 to be used as an acceptable excuse for absentee ballots. You know, right or wrong, I think that's a reasonable thing to do. People are afraid, you know, maybe unjustifiably in some cases, but nonetheless, who am I to say that they don't have a right to be concerned?
Right.
And I'm willing to accommodate that situation. I think that's fair. What's not fair is when the Secretary of State takes it upon herself and a huge taxpayer expense, as was mentioned in my column, to mail out all of these applications to every person on the voter rolls. I mean, that's millions of dollars in expense, and there is so much nonsense going on. I'm hearing from people who have received numerous ballot applications for people that lived in the same residence as they did in previous years, people who received multiple ballots because they have one in their married name, they have one in their maiden
name. Right,
yeah. I heard from someone yesterday who got one for their dead parent who's been dead for 11 years, Gary. 11 years ago, this person passed on, and yet here they are still on the voter rolls, and the Secretary of State's mailing out a ballot application.
Yeah, I've heard that same story. We're talking with State Senator Rob Sampson. I only have a couple of minutes left, and not nearly enough time, but if you can, in just that short amount of time remaining, the Police Accountability Bill, another controversial bill that's, is this going to be a partisan vote, or how do you see this going down?
Yeah, I don't even know if there's going to be a vote at this point. It's really come down to the qualified immunity section in the bill, which is what most Republicans find the most egregious item. There are 41 sections in the bill. I would say more than half of them are reasonable. I don't know if they're executed in the best way possible, but the thing that I find most offensive is the elimination of qualified immunity, which is something very misunderstood by the public. Police officers are offered immunity from civil liability if they're doing their job correctly. If someone is violating their protocol or the policy of the department or something like that, they're not covered anymore. So this is really only to protect good cops because they go into bad situations. Police officers have to show up and break up, domestic disputes and all kinds of things. And they are just in the wrong place or the right place to get a lawsuit. And the idea behind qualified immunity is to protect them from that. If you put this into law and take that away, I don't know why anyone would want to volunteer to be a police officer and put themselves in harm's way in that way.
Well,
but of the court.
Yeah, not only for new recruits, but I would imagine a lot of great cops would offer their letter of resignation.
Right, I'm hearing that all over, and there was a lot of testimony to suggest that. So what's going on right now, and this is just the inside scoop, I don't know how accurate it is, but I'm being told that there are a number of Senate Democrats that do not want that to be in the bill.